Well, I'm John Fauci. I play the bass.
I'm Ed Dwyer. I play guitar.
I'm Chris Fisher, lead vocalist.
Marcus Villano behind the drums.
Nice. And we're the Shards.
That's right.
Welcome to the legendary Shards podcast.
So you get into your teen years, Ed. When does the first notion come to you that, you know, it's kind of boring playing other people's stuff all the time? I'd like to do stuff of my own and maybe get with some other guys.
Well, in the process, so I've got finally got my own first electric guitar. I think I was 13 or 14. Yes, they're about there. And I knew some chords.
What was the guitar?
That was the Hondo V. Hondo V guitar that I had. Growing up in school, I had a, you know, my mom would send me to school with like a buck or two to go into my school savings account that I had. She was teaching me banking and all that kind of shit, and the school also. So right around sixth grade, seventh grade, I had a couple hundred bucks in there by then, you know, for a buck a day or a buck a week or 10 bucks a month, whatever the deal was. But anyways, that's where all my money went. Got it. So started taking lessons. Some local guys. I was initially taught by another rock star, Henry McFerrin, from the area here in Albany, New York, China White. And I was like, here's this guy. He's got an ad that you tear off at the public bulletin board at the supermarket.
Yeah. The numbers torn.
Yes, with the little number tabs. My mom grabbed it, sent me over to his apartment to drop me off to take a lesson. Here's this dude, long hair. He's got a Vox amp and a Les Paul, and it was him. So he tried to teach me music, but I was always the show me what I want to know. So, well, how do you do this? Luckily, I knew the A minor chord. However, moving forward, I couldn't. There was no tools like we have today, so I had to learn by ear. Sometimes it was a lot of hit and miss. And then I was like, when I, you know, in the process, reading the magazines and the articles of your favorite star, your favorite guitar player, whatever, the Hit Parade, and then in Guitar Player magazine, things progressed, I realized, again, that, they're all doing their own thing. Yeah. And I was like, I need to do my own thing. And it still sticks with me today. And it's kind of my underlying personality trait is you got to do things your way. There's a guideline, but if you stick to the guideline, then you're not going to be, you don't have a chance because you're just going to be able to hit notes. If you can't express yourself and develop a style, and not even plan, I mean, just play from the heart, I guess.
Right.
Yeah. So that's how it came about.
So what did you start playing? Just anything? Did you try to write songs?
I would hit a bar chord and I'd learn a song. Say, so it's a G chord. And I'm like, all right. And then I would learn another song. Somebody would show me, oh, I know this Ozzy tune or this Sabbath song. And I was like, oh, but that's the same chord. And that goes boom, goes from, starts at G, goes up a step to A. So and then I, out of boredom, would start playing. Well, what if I did A to G? What if I did that? Or what if I did AA or, AA, BB, GG, AA? And I just started, and then I noticed that things started sounding like things that I was hearing. And I was like, that sounds, it's not that, but it sounds close enough. And it was always a bone of contention trying to be a music guy because other people knew how the songs went. I had an idea.
Yeah.
And I was able to pull it off, but.
No.
Yeah.
So when does the first, because I know you played with other guys before us.
Uh-huh.
We weren't your first. So, what was that?
And well, I would have to get a cassette player or a record player, and I would have to learn, if we're going to do, this is in high school now, so if we're going to do, a Slayer song, I'd have to scour the market, the stores, the record stores, or actually go to a concert or know somebody who knew the song. How do you do that?
Well, that's all fine and dandy, but for some reason you're being elusive.
Well, maybe I'm not answering
to
the question.
To who the people were that you first started trying to have a band with.
Well, my friends, and one you know, Mark Villano.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
See, I hadn't until right now realized that you actually played with him before the Shards.
Right, but I never made the cut because I didn't know the songs. So I would just have to get together and we would jam. And I'd be like, well, let's just do this. If I can't play fucking Slayer or Metallica note for note, then how about I play what I know and then we'll jam the rest out. And that's what I would do. And I, you know, that was...
Early 1996, we started playing with Marcus Villano at the drums.
Our drum, and then when we came into the picture and we needed a drummer,
yeah,
you know, we were with Owen for a while, and then that kind of flaked out, and then I was like, you know, Mark, being the band whore that he is, will play with anybody. you know,
I think it was or January 1996. Ed and I took a drive on one of the most treacherous nights weather-wise. I forgot to look up the date, but there was a horrible ice storm. There was a landslide over at the mobile station on Broadway in Schenectady. A person passed away, but as that ice storm was falling, Ed and I took a interesting drive, and it was the first time I met Marcus Villano. We've sat and talked with him, power out, him and his wife in a dark apartment. And this was the first time I met Marcus, and Ed had played with him as a teenager in high school bands and jam sessions and stuff like that. Soon we had the we would rehearse, the three of us, in rehearsal space in Albany, and it was an immediate chemistry there, and Marcus was a very technical drummer, and he fit right in with the improvisational style that Ed and I developed working with Owen in the previous months.
Quite some time. Now, myself.
Finally... we had one rehearsal at,
Ted Hyland.
Ted Hyland Studios.
Bradford Street, Albany.
And we had
in the same building that was my old dentist growing up as a kid.
Three-man rehearsal. Studio. And somehow we shoehorned ourselves into their place.
Yep.
And... I don't know what the deal was. Like, it was under duress.
Well, it was under... It was... I wouldn't... Yeah, some...
We
a little
kind
bit
of
duress.
Forced ourselves in somehow. It took someone's space.
Yeah.
And we started...
They didn't really... They were like, well, someone's so supposed to be here. But I was like, well, they're not here yet. We are.
Yeah.
Why don't we just play. Do this?
And then he says... It was like $25 an hour. Remember? No. So then we got right. in and just started jamming with Marcus. And it was just like... In the attic, We had gotten so tight playing in the attic.
And you had gotten good.
Yeah.
And with Marcus's skill as a drummer, a practiced, you know, studied drummer, attempting to study drumming, with his foundation.
But then we were forcing him to improvise with us at the same time.
Right, because we were so tight. So with his, I don't know, I was going to say rigidity, but with his meter and our flow, we had to find common ground. And none of us were given. He's a good meter, man. You're a good bass. You know, we're a good melody, rhythm, melody thing going.
But he was also pushed to his limits.
He was.
And I mean, that's all testament to how, you know, you took it for granted, but how great Owen was. That, I mean, we learned to play to that.
Yeah.
And now we were developed a style of playing together. And then Marcus jumps in and starts to swim, right?
Yeah.
And I remember watching him play, and he was incredibly symmetrical.
Yes.
And I never really noticed watching him play all the years we played together, you know, but there was something about that night that he was just trying to find it, and you could tell he was very mechanical, but I remember seeing his movements becoming very geometrical, symmetrical.
And he was trying to fit.
But we were tight.
He was trying to fit into the frame. Yep. He was trying to fit something in there. Star shape, no.
That's what made him good, though, because he did have the chops.
Yes.
And, you know, his practicing was obviously a lot drier and a lot more maybe annoying to
rudimentary.
Yeah, right. But when he got pushed into the moment, now he was able to do a fill. Do something spectacular.
From his own mind.
Yeah.
What he thought it should sound like.
Yeah.
Which is, I was impressed. That Ted Hyland thing was a positive.
Yeah. That was positive. Great. And again, it was like a wall of sound. We played for like probably 40 minutes nonstop, just playing and weaving into different tunes. We did the only Springsteen song we ever did as the Shards was
Point blank,
instrumental, and it came out great.
Yep.
And for some reason, we never really pursued it. But that's one of my favorite jams. I actually think about it from time to time.
I haven't in a while. Now talking about it now, I remember it very vividly. And then the glow afterward of
us out, and we had to go. And they wanted $25 now. I gave the guy $22. That was another, you know, I don't know, so, part of the experience.
It's me, you, and Mark. We have all met.
Yeah.
And then where do you and Marcus join in? You know, where does your relationship start with the Shards and Marcus?
I don't even remember, really. I thought I was there that night with you guys because I remember the ruckus over not having enough money at the end of the day. And
maybe you listened?
I think maybe I didn't sing for some reason, but I came. I don't know.
You remember the first time you played with Marcus?
Vaguely. I was kind of, you know, I was out there at that point, so there was reasons probably why I didn't go with you guys that night or to the rehearsals previously, but I remember going somewhere in Albany. It wasn't New Music, it was like Cotton Studios or something. We played and played and played and played. And it was obvious, like you said, from the get-go that this was the guy and, you know, we'd be able to move forward and further with him. Yeah, so I do remember that. And then for me, as far as after that, it's just kind of a blur. He was in the band and we did our thing. I think, you know, the stuff with what's his name? The TV thing we did.
Oh.
That had to come shortly after that, he joined, because, you know.
Yeah, that was public access show, the Don Gaylord show. Right?
Don Gaylord show, who I did reach out to about a year ago, and he didn't have any of the tapes anymore. I did find the tapes, but I've yet to get back to the guy who's with WPTR radio now.
Oh, that's right.
And he said that maybe me and him could go in the wherever these some warehouse these tapes are in, not climate controlled. I don't have much faith that they're good anymore, but
that was a funny story because on the night of the airing of the program, I don't know where you and Ed were. You couldn't make it, but Marcus and I went to my parents' house where we were watching it and trying to tape it. But for some reason, my father hijacked the VCR process, and he was not a master of such things, and it ended up not getting taped at all. We did watch it. Marcus and I saw it. I don't think you guys saw it at all.
I have still, to this day, 30, damn near 30 years later, seen this thing.
And it was actually, I remember it to be an impressive performance, but I think it aired once or twice.
They played it a lot, actually, on that old Schenectady Public Access channel. And I had people coming up to me even a couple years after saying, hey, we saw you on, you know.
Really? I never had that.
So, but I never saw it, of course. I wasn't watching a hell of a lot of TV at that point.
Yeah. It was an interesting transition with Marcus. Like I said, he was... you know, he was a music student. He studied at College of St. Rose, a great music program, and very technical, which was a transition for us that where we were mostly improvisational and leaning on, you know, like Owen's experience and age. And we had a lot of what we did wasn't, say, thought out. And now we were, you know, teaching Marcus our originals, and for the first time we kind of had to explain what we were doing, and which what helped us grow. I think all of a sudden, excuse me, we realized what we were doing. And in explaining it, learned a lot, and we're pleasantly surprised at some of the things we were doing unbeknownst even to ourselves.
I remember Marcus saying, you know, well, you can't do that. You know, but I didn't know that you couldn't do that. Ed didn't know that you couldn't do that. If anyone had any inkling that you couldn't do that, maybe you had a little bit of an inkling. But Marcus was the only one with, you know, really kind of a lot of formal training and knowledge. And he would say, well, you can't do that. And I would say, why can't you do that? Marcus needed an explanation for everything, right, where we were just used to kind of just doing it, you know, and whatever happened, happened.
Right. Yeah, there's a lot of debate over music theory. I follow a lot of these things online and in, you know, different... you know, chat threads and stuff like that. And it's always an interesting discussion. It, you know, you might say you don't need music theory to write music. And then the music theorist will say, well, you use music theory, you just don't know it. So, and really, I think that the healthiest way of looking at it is music theory is something to explain what you've done, I think, more than I feel like anyone who's just, I don't know, following the crumbs of music theory to figure out where they're going in music seem to be barking up the wrong tree.
Well, I think, and it, I did take guitar lessons as a kid. So at the time we're starting out, I had a very rudimentary understanding. I still remembered notes and stuff if I looked at sheet music and that kind of thing. I no longer do. But when you rely on that totally, to me, it becomes very mechanical and the heart kind of is sucked out of it.
Right.
So the fight with Marcus was to keep him when he first started and just played, we were awesome. But sometimes he'd start thinking about things too much, and then it becomes plotting.
Right.
So, and that's what we actually, you know, jumping to present day, had a rehearsal last week, and we're kind of getting back into it after not playing for a lot of years with Marcus. And, you know, he was like, you know, fretting about learning everything and knowing what to do, like every, you know, drum hit of every song. And I just said, Marcus, just hear it and play it. That's yes. it. Just hear it and play it. That's when it's the best. And I firmly believe that. Yeah. And I didn't, you know, I strove not to learn anything after that. It's frustrating sometimes because Ed knows nothing either. And there's no way for us to communicate what we want to one another a lot of times, you know, because we don't speak the language.
Right.
Except when we're actually in the act of playing.
And as learned as Marcus is, and that brings a great dynamic. I mean, he is an incredibly talented drummer and does some amazing things, but he seems best when he's pushed to improvise. So we're a good combination in that way. And his rudiments help him make sense of our chaos and improvisation.
think she's just looking for love.
And was on the scene of whatever that was going on, like, you know, but those people were taking lessons, learning songs, being like, this, you know, this is the count, whatever. But yeah, I was never part of
and
all that.
And it wasn't one.
No,
one,
it wasn't my one and done method.
Or when
I'm subconsciously, it's all based on math, whether you're doing it consciously or not.
Yes. True. Oh, yes.
I think subconsciously I'm counting it, but I'm not doing it.
Right. You're not, you like, know, all right, here comes
but
the
it
six.
Is happening on because, some level.
I mean, there's almost, we had no, like, language, no spoken language, right, to really cover how we approach this. It really is just what we said.
Yeah.
We're bringing how we feel and how we relate to what the other person is doing.
Yep.
And, I mean, there's no real music theory there.
No.
Except between, like, taking guitar lessons as a kid and then playing what we were playing, I would say the difference in perception is that I always thought from playing sheet music that music was linear, that there was a beginning and then there was an end, like a maze.
Okay, okay.
You know, following the sheet music and everything was on lines, right? And you're following as a progress. And when we started playing, I started thinking of music as like a bulletin board, like something square and large.
With
and,
an area.
But you can post anything anywhere on there that you want.
Yeah.
You're filling space instead of traveling on a line.
Yeah.
And it's like within that box is where the transitions happen. And that's what keeps it cohesive, because it is within a certain arena, say.
Yes.
But then you're dividing up the time, and that's where things get interesting. But it's a totally different perspective from studied music, which seemed linear.
Yeah, definitely. And I was always impressed when we would play, and when you would write a song, Chris, or lyrics would come into play, and we would start discussing like a verse, chorus, verse kind of thing from, because you needed some kind of order to categorize things. And then that's when things came together, when we had like a song, like, you know, for whatever reason, it was 3.5 minutes long. It had a verse, it had a chorus, it had a resemblance of a bridge, and then a verse and a chorus and a solo
or
and a chorus and a verse is done. Whatever the formula was or the method. It was.
Yeah, but they weren't.
I was always impressed with that. It's like, oh, this linear stuff can be done.
Definitely weren't formulaic, you know.
No.
Just the way Not Magic ends, you know. There's all these little things that I don't even remember how they happened. They just happened.
Yeah.
You know, Saturday Sunshine starts out as the ba-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-ba-ba. But then we decide, and I don't remember, putting the poem on the beginning, and then it's da-na-na-na-na-na-na to start it. I don't even remember where that comes from. You know, Blackbird, that part at the end, da-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-
admire, like, I'm like, I think of other bands, I'm like, well, how did they know how to do that?
Yes.
Which, this seems so random. Yeah. So when in our material, when we would, or when our adventure, I would just be like, well, whatever it was, you know, not any note structure, but it was either a big ending, a soft ending. Most songs faded away. I was like, all right, well, it's got to be something like that.
Or whatever. Know, you and feel saying, out the Kiss ending, you yeah. know, bum, bum, bum.
Yeah.
How's it end? It just ends.
It just ends.
Thank you.
no coming back. I'm so far down, 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 down. So far down that I can't see the light. No coming back. I'm so far down, 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 down on the ground, lying in darkness until I'm found. Love is laughing in delight. No coming back. I'm so far down, 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 down,
So with Owen, everything was a big, fantastic Kiss, you know, ending to every song. And it made sense to us. I mean, that's what made it. That's why we were doing it, right? I mean, we were there to play rock music. And rock music is played a certain way with a certain swagger and a certain sound. And it ends with a, you know, beautiful breakdown. And everybody agrees. Catches, you know, eye contact and knows when to end. And that was sort of, and that's where the line, the catchphrase of it just ends.
Yes. Marcus was endlessly asked, well, how does this one end?
Yes.
Well, it just ends.
It just ends.
Well, what do you mean it just ends? Well, it just ends. Well, but what do you mean?
So. Yeah. See any Kiss song. Right? Yeah. It ends with a beautiful, nice breakdown and you get there. But, you know, then we discovered things like we've discussed a lot about, you know, Owen's Attic. Owen's Attic was, you know, the pinnacle of improvisational music, and where we would just play. And, you know, one of the probably the best thing that came out of Owen's Attic was the song Not Magic. And the music side, and it was a, you know, nice bouncy jazz riff that breaks into a heavy hard rock finale. I remember when Marcus was figuring that out, I thought it was pretty novel and interesting that we found out that the song actually begins on two, which, you know, may or may not be impressive in the world of music theory. I mean, it's just, it's a description. It's part of the language. We didn't know. We weren't trying to do anything that fancy, but that's just how it worked out. That's how it, you know, was described. And, you know, stuff like that kind of was always fascinating. Like learning what we were doing was fascinating on the music theory side. But, you know, really our creative process was basically just to create. And it was almost all spontaneous to a certain degree. You know, I don't know that we ever tried specifically. I remember at one time when, you know, talking about time signatures and things like that with Marcus as we were starting to explore those things. I mean, there was a time we were working on like a, you know, a 15-8 riff or something like that, you know, early on. But there wasn't a lot of that sort of highbrow attempts. You know, but
no, and if you guys even started to go into that discussion, to be honest, my eyes just glazed over and I went off to some other place until you were done talking about it.
Yeah.
Because yeah. It was like listening to two people speak Japanese for me. So, right. And I didn't want it anyway. I just wanted to feel it. I wanted it to be all heart from everyone, you know?
Right.
But like you said, the fact that Marcus did know a bit helped us immensely.
Yeah.
And just, you know, added to the dynamic of what the band was and would become.
And at the bottom line is when you do hear a, even Not Magic, and the way he's able to incorporate, you know, his drum techniques in the fills and stuff. I mean, I say the proof is in the pudding, right?
Absolutely. And while, you know, Owen was incredible for us, he was about 15 years older than us. He was what we needed at the time we found him, and he brought us to a certain level. But
watch him apply his craft, you know. I mean, obviously, it sounds great. Because we should all get a chance to start.
Hey, hey, little girl in the sand. Hey, hey, little girl. Hey, hey, little girl, won't you let me? Hey, hey, little girl, won't you set me free? Hey, hey, little girl, walking in the sand. Hey, hey, little girl, give me your hand. Hey, hey, little girl, won't you let me be? Hey, hey, little girl, won't you set me free?
Thank you. close to winning.